Hey, if you're listening to this in the week as this podcast episode becomes released, then you still have time to step up and go to the webinar page that we have, because on the Thursday and on the Tuesday of this week, we will have a webinar about productivity. And we'll not only talk about productivity, the classical tools, but also how you can better learn your leadership skills and how they will help you to become much more productive. We'll also talk about the upcoming leadership program of the Effective Statistician that is available right now as well. So head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and register there for the webinar that is happening this week. Hey, you are listening to the Effective Statistician podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today we are talking about getting to yes, negotiation skills for every day. This is another book review that I'm doing together with Stuart. So if you enjoyed the last one, you'll probably enjoy this one as well. It's very, very practical this time, a little bit much more practical than last time. So stay tuned for some really, really good learnings. Getting to Yes is really a fundamental book that probably everybody should read. Really everybody. It was fundamental for me early in my career, and it helped me throughout my career really very, very much. And you will see from the discussion with Stuart how kind of aha moments he had by reading this book. By the way, this book is just one resource among lots of others that I share regularly on LinkedIn. So if you're not yet following me on LinkedIn, just head over to LinkedIn and follow me. And if you don't have a LinkedIn profile, well, I can tell you it's a must-have to succeed in the business, because that's where a lot of people externally and even internally within your companies find out about you and who you are. So head over to LinkedIn and follow me. I also have a special group for the Effective Statistician where you can join like-minded people. So I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. PSI has a lot to offer to develop your statistical capabilities. For example, through the video on demand content library, free registration to all the upcoming PSI webinars, and much, much more. Just head over to PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician, and this is the second book review that I'm doing together with Stuart. How is Stuart? How are you doing?
Very well indeed. Thank you, Alexander. Very well.
Very good. And today we are talking a book that I learned about maybe 15 years ago in negotiation training that I did at my previous company. And it was a really, really good training. It had, you know, lots of live negotiations. And I still remember, you know, that we started with a situation where a partner and I were given kind of positions, and then we needed to negotiate. And I think it was about a car deal or something like this. I was really poor in negotiation, and I was really kind of giving in far too fast on the price and things like that, and really unhappy. You know, we didn't make a deal in the end. And then, you know, we went through all what went wrong in this negotiation. And then, you know, we learned about this Harvard approach of negotiation and how to be, you know, good in terms of negotiation. So that's where I learned first about the book. Yeah, Stuart, you have recently read the book. Where have you read it?
So I can't believe, Alexander, this book has escaped me for so many years. So thank you for bringing it to my attention. So yeah, I was holidaying in the island of Islay, which is off the west coast of Scotland. Absolutely most beautiful, idyllic place to grab some time. I think it's got a population of 3,000, possibly more sheep, a bit more cattle, lots of beaches, blessed by beautiful weather. And you'd suggested this book, and I thought, right, I'll give it a whirl. Wasn't 100% sure because I got to say, quite a bland sort of front cover. And again, never judge a book by its cover. But once I got into this, it was pretty much non-stop. And I have just found it so fascinating, so fascinating. And there's a few things I'd like to unpick in it. But I'm going to plug this book, but I'm also going to plug a visit to the island of Islay, which is just absolutely sensational. And next door to Islay is another island called Jura, which interestingly is where George Orwell wrote 1984. And I have to say, quite a contrast to that landscape and that beautiful scenery, that book. Maybe we'll do that on another review sometime. So getting to yes. For me, I think the underlining principles of this book, if I just go big for a moment before we go into the detail, that some of the big things I took from this book was about separating substance from people. Yeah. And all through the really tough negotiations that I have done in my previous roles, I just remember how tough some of those people were to negotiate with. And having read this book and understanding this principle of decoupling principles and people, I now realize that actually I can't remember many of the real tricky points that we were negotiating over. And this whole thing about understanding the person that you're working with, forming some sort of relationship, forming a relationship enough that you'll have a relationship after the negotiation, has been really powerful for me. And I come away thinking, wow, I wish I'd read this book 15 years ago. It would help a lot. Yeah. So that's like the big picture takeaway for me.
I completely agree. And kind of the emotional barrier is really big. You know, it's and in both sides, yeah, in the other side and our side as well. Yeah. So if we get kind of cornered or frustrated or angry or, you know, these kind of things, that can completely derail us. And when we are then in this amygdala hijack, yeah, there's no really good things get come out of that.
And I thought that, and one of these beautiful takeaway images in the book is about this idea of the balcony. So when you're in a really tough place and you want to write that hard email, and you write all these sort of tough things, you know, you put it in your draft box, or if you've just had a really tough telephone call, you go to the balcony. I think it's the balcony is mentioned. You take a step back, reflect, think, understand, absorb before you react. And it's so simple to say, it's so obvious. But when you've got that, you know, you use those words, it's sort of emotion, passion, you know, all those sort of things that are cooking up inside you as a person, you yourself as a person, to separate and come away from that and try to reflect on what's happened is really tough, really tough. Very, very powerful indeed.
One of the things about there is always be clear on your goals. So if you go into the negotiation and you are clear on what you want to achieve, and then you can always ask yourself again, what did you want to achieve? And that kind of question actually helps your brain to go back to the thinking mode and out of this fight or flight mode. So that is really powerful, because otherwise all your, you know, your energy is in your limbs rather than in your...
I like that. I think they spend a lot of time on this listening and really trying to understand why it is that they are, why they're pushing sort of certain positions, and almost getting that that whole listening and trying to, I don't know, almost call out what are the negotiation points here. Call it out. Is this a tough negotiation? Is this sort of a good cop, bad cop negotiation? What is it that's going on? And really try to listen and understand the scenario that's being set before you play the game, which I think moves on to something that we were, another book that we've read together.
So in terms of, these negotiation, they don't necessarily need to be always, appear to be tough from a tough tone and things like that. I used to work a lot with psychiatrists. And negotiation with psychiatrists is really, really interesting, because you only find out afterwards how they tricked you. And one of the really interesting things is they could, make you do what they wanted and still feel good about it. These manipulating without actually knowing about it, that is also something that you need to watch out for. Negotiations can also be really kind of nice discussions and things like that, and you only afterwards, realize how much you have given in. So it doesn't need to be always kind of, tough confrontations. But one of the, if you think back of negotiations, what are the biggest problems that is about that, about negotiation?
Well, if I can just comment on the psychiatry sort of example that you've just given, is the ability to identify the type of negotiation that you're entering into. I think that is worth its weight in gold. Understanding that game that we're about to play. And one of the things that the book addresses, which I think stems off of this, is what if the power is unequally distributed between the negotiators? Yep. So I think, one of the examples was, you're negotiating against the White House, in the US, or if you're negotiating with a landlord and they're trying to remove you from the house, all these examples of where the power across the negotiating table is unequal, and how you can use techniques to address that. And I think that for me is something that's been very difficult for me in the past, where the power, particularly when I've been negotiating quite large deals, is that I'm not the ultimate decision maker. And often the person that I'm negotiating with isn't the ultimate decision maker. So I'm having to represent, collect this sort of cloud of decisions from a team of people. And the other person is negotiating and trying to get the best for their company or their project or whatever it is they're negotiating on. And in some ways, there's a very powerful phrase in the book about believing what you say and saying it with real belief. I'm paraphrasing now, but when you're negotiating on behalf of a company and you're given lots of different things, almost like this sort of menu, this tick list of things that we need to achieve, and the other person is doing the same, that's quite tough to, and you're talking about difficulties, that's quite tough sometimes to always measure up and deliver, particularly when it's not, you know, not yourself that's the ultimate decision maker. And sometimes there are things that you're negotiating where you think, do we really need this? Is this something that we really need to have in this contract? Or is it because Bob has said that it's a nice to have and he wants it, you know? Yeah. So I think that's been quite difficult when I reflect on deals that I've done in the past. That's been a really tricky thing.
Yeah, the other thing is kind of if you go into these negotiations and they kind of go on forever. Yeah, I've been in these discussions, for example, about preparing a study. Yeah, and you negotiate about and discuss about the study design again and again and again and again and again, and yeah, you try to find an optimum between quality and speed and budget. Yeah, and it's endless meetings. Yeah, and yeah, in the end, you kind of think, okay, now we have a really fast and cheap study, but will it really turn the needle? Yeah, will we be more clever after the study? You have these kind of sometimes this win-lose situations. Yeah, if the other person that has more power, yeah, maybe that is the operations guy or that is someone higher up in the organization that is part of your study team, and they just kind of, you know, use their authority to get things on their side.
Yeah.
In the end, you know, maybe that person has won, but all the relationships are broken. Yeah. And you don't trust each other anymore. And the you know, moving forward to the project is a complete pain because, you know, yeah, nobody trusts each other, and everything takes longer and longer and longer because this negotiation had this fallout in terms of, yeah, hurt relationship.
And that for me, like a knife through butter, is this great phrase that comes through the book. I think the book should be renamed, this whole idea of BATNA, the best alternative to a negotiated agreement. So yeah, this, know your options before you go into the negotiation, know what else you can do. And ultimately, if you need to walk away from this negotiation, what are the alternatives? What are the options? And have those ready up your sleeve so that you're immediately able to sort of call on them, or just have them sort of diffusing as you're conducting this negotiation. So BATNA, and I think the book, while I kind of get this sort of, you know, this understanding that the people who wrote this book, you know, are dealing with sort of world peace type negotiations between governments. But then it also drops into this sort of landlord-tenant type case study. You know, they really try to make sure that, you know, these techniques are relevant for all types of negotiation. And as soon as you start to understand, I mean, I think we all know it's good to have alternatives, it's good to have options, but really to live and breathe that in a day-to-day setting and in when you're going into a negotiation, it's quite hard to keep remembering that. So I have to say that for me is one of the sort of the highlights, how they unpick this whole BATNA, best alternative to a negotiated agreement, and just knowing your options. But not always having to share those in the negotiation, maybe sort of keeping some of that back to yourself, you know, yeah. Really powerful.
That is really powerful, especially because then it's not about, oh, I need to really get this to a result. Maybe you don't. Yeah. So, and that's where a lot of power comes from. So, for example, if you negotiate about a promotion, yeah, and as an alternative, maybe you move to another group, or maybe, you know, you have an offer from another company that you can move to. If you have these different alternatives, you have a very, very different way of how you can negotiate. And you can go into the negotiation with much more self-confidence and much more kind of, you know, maybe a more push. Yeah.
Yes.
Then if you just go in there and it's about, yeah, being promoted or not being promoted. Yeah. And
yeah.
Then, you know, you maybe it's the best what you can get out is, you know, maybe a promotion a little bit later, or, you know, without just with a title, but without money increase or whatsoever. Yeah. But if you have a really good alternative, that's really, really powerful.
And I say, I think that's that whole dynamic of how people can put pressure on you during a negotiation. They talk about this in the book, but this sort of unequal negotiation, and how sometimes people will use sort of tactics and put pressure on you. And often the result of pressure is quite a negative one. Mm-hmm. And I like this. I like this sort of availability of having alternatives and having options, so that if you feel something is underhand or there is an unfair use of pressure being exerted on the negotiation, you can just say, okay. And in your example, okay, this job isn't for me. I think I'll move on. You know, the headhunter's being too forceful. He wants this too much. Actually, I'm better off staying where I am, you know. Yeah. And I think that understanding of the options and using that in during your negotiation, I think that's a really sort of nice technique. I mean,
yeah, especially kind of, I have said quite a lot when headhunters are calling. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you start out by saying, I'm working for a great company and I'm really happy about my supervisor, I have lots of options here, I'm really, people take care of me, I can work on great projects, yeah, then that is, the headhunter directly knows, okay, he is a really, really strong plan B if he doesn't jump. Yeah, so
it's, yes.
That, of course, puts you in a much better position than if you start by saying, oh, yeah, everything is kind of crappy here. I don't get along with my supervisor. Kind of, yeah, projects where I just need to clean up the mess and there's no impact and I'm not allowed to go on to any conferences and things like that. And, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Alex, that was really good. Maybe you've got a future in headhunting.
Well, I'm currently growing my team, and I have a lot of kind of these discussions about people moving into my team. And I see it also from the other side. So.
And that's one of the really powerful techniques in negotiation, is that whole empathy, understanding. And I think... I also took, and I walked into my nearest town on Sunday, and I was reflecting on this point about how the most successful negotiation is, you have a relationship before, you have a relationship during, and you have a relationship after.
Yeah.
And some of the tough personal negotiations I've had in the past, where I have been the tenant in a property and the landlady has been really tough, you know, the monthly terms and all that sort of thing. And I've kind of thought, well, it doesn't really matter if I don't have a relationship with this person, because you know, I'm never going to rent from them again. But that's not the point. The point is that you feel bitter and sour, and a little bit of you dies inside when you make an enemy, or you have somebody that you're not able to be respectful towards again. So I really like this. At the end of the negotiation, you still have a relationship. You still have, I think maybe friendship's too strong, but you still have an ability to communicate with that person. And whatever the negotiation is, whether it's for a large phase three project contract or whether it's over a tenancy in a flat, I think that's something that's really resonated with me hugely. And I've been reflecting on that a lot during not just reading this book, but afterwards as well, and how I can improve that sort of style that I have.
Completely. So a very good friend of mine once said to me when I was studying, you always meet twice. Yeah. So it's, you know, if you mess it up the first time and then you win, you know, and you hurt the relationship, you'll be paid that back later. And maybe you didn't even know, because, you know, you are being talked about in the background and things like that. So there's always a fallout. I remember that I was at a meeting and we were three people in the study team and the project leader. The operations person wanted to do some further analysis. And I didn't saw the point in these. And so we were kind of negotiating in front of the medical director that was about to make the decision whether we do this analysis or not. You know, won this argument. And because the director then said, no, you don't need to do that. You have other more important things to do. Felt good about it up to the point where I had a discussion with my supervisor, or the supervisor of my supervisor, because that was the best friend of the project leader.
Stakeholder management. Wow.
Yeah, and of course, you know, they meeting directly after that. And then, you know, I had a lot of kind of mess to clean up later on. So
yeah.
You always meet twice. And so make sure that, you know, you have a good relationship is really important. And really nice frame that the book also talks about. I think it has a lot to do with seeing the problem from the other side. Yeah.
Yes.
What are the core concerns of the other side? And you know, there's very often, and that's the other interesting thing that I think about the book, is this notion of what is the position and what is the interest. Yeah. So very often people just talk about the position, but not the interest behind it. So there's this famous example that people speak about, you know, two kids have just one orange. And they both want to have this orange, and you know, they speak about, oh, what we can, you know, how can we come up with a solution? And you know, it's arguing back and forward, and both want the orange. And that is the problem. I want to have the orange. And then the interest is one wants to have, you know, to make it to use the
appeal. Yeah.
And the other one just wants to use the skin for baking something. Yeah. So, and that's a different interest. And by knowing the interest, you can resolve the problem. And that is kind of a really, really important thing there. So, this interest and then finding out about the interest. And I think you can only do that if you work on the empathy part and understand where the other side is coming from.
Yeah, what do you really want? I think when we previously talked in about the infinite game, I think I talked about how in my sort of world and sphere, when you're working from a service company and you're sort of selling into a pharma or a biotech, the most successful deals are the ones that you create, that you innovate, that aren't, you know, it's not a tactical thing, it's a strategic thing, and it's something that you kind of brainstorm around and say, you know, what is it you're missing and how can we, you know, how can we formulate something that works, or what are the issues that you're facing and how can we, you know, work together to find something that resolves that or satisfies it. And in the book, they talk about this US-Russian relations with the nuclear arms deals and how there's this group of what they call wizards, which are highly technical scientific people, but they're both dual linguals. So they both speak Russian and American. And they call these guys the wizards because when there's like an impasse or an issue with the negotiation, these guys go off and have a discussion over a restaurant or, you know, they take some time out, you know, together, and they unpick what are the true, real points of discussion and come up with a solution. And I really like that. Again, it talks about sort of stepping back, going to the balcony, formulating quite a small, I think it was like four, formulating a small team to address, using that empathy, understanding, and then coming back with, you know, with ideas. And when I'm trying to negotiate, when I'm trying to look at how can we solve a bigger picture or how can we formulate a plan and brainstorm around something, those are often the most, they're the best deals that I've ever done, you know, by far. They may not be the largest, but they're the most impactful deals that I've ever done. And I think that's, you know, when I reflect on that, it takes a bit more time, but it definitely has more impact.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's really important to, you know, dig deeper on these kind of things. Ask questions. Why is that important for you? Yeah, where are you coming from? And find out about, you know, where the people are coming from, then you can invent these options for mutual gain. Yeah, so that's really important. The other thing is from the emotional side, yeah. So where are the people coming from? What are their core concerns from the emotional part? And there's five things that the book specifically calls out. That is, the first thing is autonomy. Yeah.
Yeah.
By this negotiation, do they feel kind of being cornered, or do they feel, you know, that they don't have any options anymore, and, you know, they don't have autonomy anymore? The other thing is there kind of a lack of appreciation? I had in the past lots of discussions where there was about authorships on paper. Yeah, and then a couple of statisticians were contributing to the paper. Yeah, someone maybe worked on the study, another one worked on the analysis, a third one worked on the manuscript, or maybe that was a study that was pooled from a manuscript that was pooled from many studies, and then, you know, all the study statisticians wanted to be authors. And of course, that doesn't work that way. Yeah, and it's about this authorship thing was a lot about also appreciation of the work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So another thing, the next thing, a core concern is affiliation. So being part of something. Yeah. If by the negotiation you kind of, people feel threatened that they are kind of sidelined, or that they, you know, through this negotiation kind of put out of the team. Yeah, that's a core concern as well. Another thing is role and kind of the purpose. Yeah, so if people feel like that is under pressure. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And the final thing is status. Yeah. Although, you know, we often think about, no, that shouldn't be a thing. Yeah. And we are staying, you know, we are humble and we are above that. Well, in the end, this is very, very often important. Yeah, and that's why in negotiations about jobs, the title very often plays a big role.
It's actually really interesting. I was reflecting on this about the sort of similarities of statisticians in the pharmaceutical clinical trial process and the role of the negotiator, is that both have to represent the facts. You can't change the facts. The facts are real. This is what has been proven. This is what is shown. And then it's really about communicating that so that people can understand it. And I think it's almost a sort of an unsung hero type of role. The accolade doesn't go to the negotiator, and often it doesn't go to the statistician when the results are. But to be able to fathom what are the facts and present them in a clear and understandable way, that is the real value. And it does feel to me it's a little bit, kind of goes without the appreciation that it should get, maybe. And I think the role of the statistician being able to decipher and communicate is very, very key to the greater understanding or even just that individual project. So I see similarities in there. It's quite insightful.
Yeah, and I think, we are talking here about this because we want the listener as a statistician, to better be able to negotiate about these things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't see why, on medical publications, the first and last author always needs to be, physicians. Why?
Yes.
Yeah. So I know about one publication where our common friend Claire, first author, because it was a really, really technical and it was a really impactful great, great paper. Yeah, it's great that she was first also on that and not, a scientist or another scientist, not a data scientist, but a physician. Yeah. I think we should be in, better in terms of these negotiation skills and have, through that more power and influence on things, because otherwise, we come out with bad design, bad science, and that will hurt, the customers and in our industry, the patients in the end.
Yeah, I mean, let's go back to the patient. I mean, because at the end, that's where the ultimate benefit or not will be seen. So I really like that story, and I'll have to embarrass Claire with it when I see her next. But yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. Really cool. We should see more of those.
I think that is, in terms of the benefit of the patients, that can also be something that is a common kind of interest that the people can have. It can be kind of a measure on how you weigh up the different options. Yeah, what's the best for the patient?
Yes.
And that is also what the book speaks about. If you have kind of a common metrics that you can use to negotiate about, that is really, really great to have, because then it's much easier to weigh up the different options. Yeah. So they speak about, references or guidelines or, things like that, or benchmarks that you can use. So, for example, when it's about house pricing, you can, you have the local benchmark as something to negotiate about. Yeah,
and I see in the book talking about, sort of different techniques you can use, and having maybe bringing in a mediator. So if there's two people with it doesn't need to be a conflict, but it might be two people with a different view. Like, I think in the book they talk about a couple who are looking to design their own house, and then the architect is really working as the mediator, trying to find all the things that are important for one person, all the things that are important to the other person, and really amalgamate that into a design, a plan. And it's all, and I think how that reflects in when you're in a meeting, typically it doesn't have to be confrontational, but it can be two people with differing views, and then either bringing in a third person to become the mediator to get the best out of those two views, or one of you formulating that position of how do I make the compromises here to be the mediator between the two of us, you know, starting with yourself as the mediator in that situation.
I think I have seen statisticians in that place quite a lot. Yes, where there's two different sides and the statistician kind of jumps in and plays a mediator. Yeah, so because very often the statistician is thought of as very logical, as very trustworthy, and that position sometimes sets you up to be a good mediator. But of course, you still then need very, very good communication skills, and you need to have a good relationship with both sides. Yeah. And
yes.
The last thing that you want to do is that you want to, you know, ruin your relationship with one side in these kind of mediating roles. So, I think sometimes it helps to then kind of paraphrase things, to speak about options so that the other side can understand it as well. You know, so that is that's a good.
But Anzana, in the role of the statistician in this, how? I mean, I guess this idea of the sort of the Batman, the best alternative to a negotiated agreement. How many times do statisticians go in with the option and say, and actually walk away where there's no real agreement that's being made, or there's an impasse, and they say, okay, you know, it's time to walk away from this? Or is there always somewhere that you can get to as a statistician?
I think it depends on the circumstances, but yeah. I think we are very often not clear on what our BATNA is. Yeah, so we are not clear on what the exit option is. If we go into and want to design a new study, or if we want to, you know, get to a final point, I think it's sometimes really difficult to imagine that, but that's where, you know, creativity plays a big role, and seeing the bigger picture, and maybe, you know, speaking with a peer about it, or with your supervisor about it, reflecting on what could be exit options if you know the negotiation isn't successful. Maybe it's, you know, sometimes if you make a proposal, just the documentation of the proposal and your concerns. Yes, so then that at least when there's some, maybe a year later after the study, there's, and they do a postmortem in terms of, you know, what went wrong, all these things are documented and it's clear, and the, you know, at least in the long term, the company can learn from it and don't repeat.
Sure.
That is really important. But I think it's about the statisticians being better equipped with these kind of tools, so that when they go into this negotiation, or they, you know, find themselves in negotiation, you know, that come out of nowhere as well, that people are really good equipped, because other areas, you know, spend a lot of time in learning about that. Yeah, especially when you think about lawyers. Yeah, they have a lot of training in that. Or as we, you know, talked about psychiatrists and other areas, they have a lot of experience in that. And statisticians very often focus only on the technical skills and not so much on these type of skills. And that can hurt in the long run.
Yeah, it's a real blend, isn't it? I mean, to be able to have those soft skills, keep the relationship, keep the empathy, the understanding, but also those sort of fierce, razor sharp technical skills and being able to sort of marry those together. It's a very interesting blend.
Yeah. Okay, so today we talked about Getting to Yes, a great foundational book that influenced lots of negotiations around the world. It's also called the Harvard model of negotiation. And we talked about a couple of key things. We talked about the emotional side of these negotiation, that it's about, you know, the people and the problems and making clear about what are you currently talking about. Is it a problem or the people side of things? It's about, you know, being empathetic and seeing the problem from the other side, knowing about what are the core concerns that are at play here in terms of, for example, status or autonomy, and coming up with great options for decisions, because we know about the interest and not just the position of the different sides. So I can highly recommend reading this book. And it's really great, I think, basis training. I recently had a training about, you know, leadership skills, and one of the trainer also recommended this book. There's another really good book about negotiations that we may talk at a different time point, but that's for later. Stuart, any kind of final comments regarding Getting to Yes?
No, I think we've had quite a packed discussion. One of the things that I really took from this as well is also make it easy for your other negotiator. So the person sitting across from you, make it easy for them to get to a final resolution. And I think sometimes we forget that. So lots of gems. And thank you very much, Alexander, for another great book choice.
Okay, very good. So this was another book review with Stuart, and we have already the next ones planned. So just, if you haven't done yet, subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss any of the other episodes. This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain, who helps with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Head over to TheEffectiveStatistician.com to find the show notes, learn more about this podcast that will help you boost your career as a statistician in the health sector. Also, please tell your colleagues about this podcast, because this is all free material, and I want to have as many people as possible benefiting from this. Like always, reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.